Welcome to the first of three episodes featuring Dr. Stuart Burrow, a veterinarian with a passion for innovation, respectful leadership, and a commitment to being at the sharp end of veterinary research and results. Today, we'll hear about Dr. Stuart's background and his unique commute to work. But that's not all. He also talks about the groundbreaking treatment for arthritis in dogs that had impressive results and why it had to be shelved. So join us as we discover what it's like working at Vet Marlborough and being on Dr. Stuart's team. You are listening to Paws, Claws and Wet Noses, the vet podcast celebrating all creatures, great and small, and their fantabulous professionals who look after them all. Paws, Claws, Wet Noses is powered by VetStaff, New Zealand's only specialist recruitment agency dedicated to helping veterinary professionals find jobs that they're excited about going to on Monday mornings. VetStaff.co.nz. Welcome to episode 135. I am your show host, Julie South. Dr. Stuart Burrow is the founder and director of Vet Marlborough, established in 1998. He's a 1983 Massey grad and a recognised member of the Australian and New Zealand College of Veterinary Scientists, specialising in small animal medicine. Dr. Burrow's dedication to learning led him to the University of Florida as a practitioner in residence, where he became certified in the pen hip technique for assessing hip dysplasia. In 2010, he introduced stem cell therapy for arthritis treatments in dogs, revolutionising care in the South Island. Dr. Burrow also heads the canine reproduction team, focusing on semen freezing and artificial insemination. Beyond his professional achievements, Dr. Burrow served as a counsellor and president of the Australasian College of Veterinary Scientists, receiving a presidential award for his exceptional service. Outside of work, he enjoys sailing, scuba diving, and skiing. Dr. Burrow is married to Jenny, an interior designer. They have two grown-up children, Lana, who's also a veterinarian, and Isaac, a boat builder, a miniature schnauzer, and two Burmese cats, Ringo and Mick. I wonder who's the Stones fan. If you're a small animal veterinarian and you're looking for a change of pace, a change of scene, then especially listen to this with a view as to what it might be like working on Dr. Burrow's team. The VetStaff team is privileged to be working with Dr. Burrow and Catherine at Vet Marlborough to find them their next dream team member, someone who's into providing best practice standards of care and being part of a team where everyone is supported to bring their absolute best selves to work each day. If you'd like to know more, then please get in touch with either Isabel or myself at vetstaff.co.nz to have a preliminary confidential chat. We join the conversation here today where I ask Dr. Burrow when he absolutely knew he wanted to be a veterinarian.
Yeah, that's pretty easy really, Julie, because it's still very clear in my mind as if it happened yesterday, and I was only 14 at the time. I grew up on a sheep and beef farm in Nelson, and I can remember visiting the local vet with my father with one of his farm working dogs, and I can still see us driving home back up Waimea Road to the farm, and I just said, I'm going to be a vet. So it was as simple as that. And the thing that was difficult for me, though, after, you know, being sort of, I suppose it really helped me having that clear direction from a fairly young age, but as inevitably happens, aunts and uncles would ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up, Stuart? And it was mostly negative, quoting the statistics of, you know, how few people got selected to go in, and that had me a bit worried that I wouldn't be able to pursue my dream until, in those days, we sat school certificate as an external examination in the fifth form. And when I got my results back from that, it gave me the confidence. So I guess it made me more determined. And if I got asked that, I said, well, I'm going to be a vet. And that was it.
What happened? Was there a significant procedure or treatment? Was your farm dog hurt? Was it a life-saving moment that inspired you to realise you wanted to be a vet?
It was an injury causing a lameness. It wasn't sort of anything groundbreaking. I'd seen the vets, you know, come to visit the farm, whether it be for a, you know, a cow down with milk fever or pregnancy testing and so on. But it just sort of gelled in my mind. It was sort of just like this revelation that suddenly that was it, and you know, nothing changed from then on. And I had that direction, which was amazing.
Was it everything you thought it would be?
Yes. It's been like I've been practicing as a vet for 40 years now, and you know, I can honestly say there's nothing else that I would have rather done. I still enjoy my work immensely. Up until 2 years ago, I was still working full time, and even now I'm still at 4 days a week. But it's been challenging. It's been difficult for family at times, and there's been a lot of things that perhaps I've missed out on because I've been working or on call, but then there have been tremendous rewards as well.
You live in a beautiful part of Aotearoa God Zone.
Yes.
Was there any thought that you might set up a practice or practice other than in Marlborough?
One of my prerequisites really was that I wanted to live in the top of the South Island. It was sort of, I grew up in Nelson. I always thought that I would end up back in Nelson, but sort of circumstances meant that I settled in Marlborough and stayed here. I was fortunate when I graduated, it would seem hard to appreciate now, but jobs were actually difficult to come by. And out of a class of 60, when we finished, there were only six of us that had jobs to go to in clinical practice. That's sort of unbelievable with today's climate. So a lot of my classmates ended up going and working in meatworks and anywhere they could that was sort of veterinary related initially. And so I was very fortunate to get offered a job in Marlborough, in the top of the south, that I loved. And I've spent some time working in Nelson, but moved back to Marlborough and have been here since 1986.
When you were that 14-year-old saying you're going to be a vet, did you have the specialist path in mind at that time?
No. In fact, things have changed quite a lot. And at the outset, I'm not a specialist, but I suppose with my qualification and as a membership of the Australian New Zealand College of Veterinary Scientists, I'm sort of intermediate, I suppose, a specialist GP. So I'm somewhere between a GP and a specialist. But the amazing thing was, coming off a farm, I always thought I would be a mixed vet or a large animal vet. And in fact, when I left Massey, I had this plan that perhaps I would go back and do postgraduate diploma in land animal health or flock health. But yeah, it was just, I suppose, the opportunities and circumstances. And I always loved woodwork. And so I really enjoyed surgery and doing things with my hands. And I was quite a perfectionist in doing those handcrafts and so on. And the way opportunities led, when I moved back to Marlborough, I actually became the first vet that focused on companion animals. Up until that time, all of the vets in Marlborough had been very much the James Herriot type vet that did a bit of everything. So that became my focus, and gradually I morphed from being a mixed practitioner to somebody with a special interest in companion animals, and that led me then to do the membership examinations. That was about an 18-month program for me, and quite a commitment. And since then, further postgraduate study. And I suppose the crossroads for me, wondering, well, did I want to go further down that specialist route or not, was that I was successful in an application to go and do a practitioner in residence program at the University of Florida for 3 months. So that was a fantastic opportunity for me and for my teenage children at the time to go and live in Florida for 3 months. So the practitioner in residence program was designed to bring experienced practitioners in to work in the faculty so that the final year students would get the perspective of a bit more what it's like out in practice rather than in the university environment. So you had both a teaching role but also tremendous opportunity to learn. And I did get offered a position while I was there, but it was really trying, well, for me, it was a lifestyle choice of somewhere that I wanted to live that allowed me to enjoy the lifestyle that I enjoy, a great climate. And in fact, I live in the Marlborough Sounds and commute to work by boat each day. So if I was a specialist in a large city, I certainly wouldn't be able to do that. Yeah, so for about 8 years, we've done that. It's a for Marlborough standards, it's a long commute. It's about 50 minutes from door to door, but 15 minutes of that is in the boat, and then I putter into the marina and tie up and get into the car, and it's a half hour drive through from the Waikawa Marina to Blenheim. Beautiful start to the day, early morning, and there's not a lot of boat traffic then. A few commercial boats heading out, but coming home, it's a wonderful wind down period. And as I turn into our bay, Blackwood Bay, and you can no longer see sort of civilization behind you, it's a great separation to leave work behind.
Have there been very many days when you haven't been able to get to work because of the weather?
I'm often asked that, and unfortunately, no. There's only been sort of like two or three, and those I have been able to work from home with my role as the director doing administrative work. Or yeah, it's very, very rare that it's too rough to come across. So it works very well.
So we're talking an outboard, are we? Not a sailboat.
Yeah. Yes, an outboard. Yeah.
When you were in Florida, was there very much difference in medicine in New Zealand to medicine in the States at that time?
Standard-wise, no. I mean, there's a few exotic diseases, tick-borne diseases, et cetera, that were present in the States that we're fortunate enough not to have here. No, it was a tremendous learning opportunity. And, you know, at that stage when I was there, TPLO surgeries for cruciates were something very new and exciting. There was, you know, quite a lot going on at the university with research into using radiation treatment for tumours of brain and head and so on. And it was great because I could follow through any of the cases that I wanted to through the various disciplines. So I got training and doing cardiac ultrasounds. And yeah, so even though I was there primarily doing medicine, I could spend time in the imaging department. I got invited to join the surgery department and scrubbing for some cases as well. So you were treated really, you know, like somebody very special, and it was a huge opportunity. So yeah, I really loved it.
And talking of innovation, stem cell.
Yes.
How did that come about?
Yeah, well, I suppose the initial interest was actually through one of my original partner vets who was unfortunate enough to develop multiple myeloma, and he went through stem cell treatment as a treatment for his bone cancer, and which has been very successful. And, you know, he's still alive today following that. So when I found out and read about stem cell treatment for arthritis, it really captured my imagination. And I was fascinated that these cells could have such an impact on the body, from healing somebody with bone cancer to treating arthritis. And so when the opportunity came up that there was some training in stem cell treatment, I leapt at the opportunity, and I was the first vet in the South Island to introduce stem cell treatment for treating arthritis in dogs. In the initial process, we started off extracting stem cells from fat that was surgically harvested from behind the scapula over the rib cage. We'd get about 30 grams of fat, and then spend about 3 hours in the laboratory processing that to extract and activate the stem cells, and then they would be injected back into the affected arthritic joints. You know, it took most of a day, the processing, but it was fascinating. And then the development led to the production of a stem cell activator solution that we could purchase. And that was simply injected intravenously into the dogs. It would, on average, it would only be a 2 mil dose, and they would have 4 injections given 3 weeks apart. The advantage of this, of course, was that it was not completely non-invasive. There was no surgery or anesthetics involved, and we achieved very similar results with this technique. But we ran into a problem in that the company who had the license and was importing the products into New Zealand, they initially had a provisional license to, which was designed to allow them to do some trials and get some information to go towards full registration. But I don't think they really understood that process. They weren't a pharmaceutical company, and it transpired that MPI found out that they had been selling the product and using it commercially rather than just for trials. And so they sort of came down quite heavily on them. There was a court case. And then when it came to trying to get full registration for the product, I think they'd run out of resources, and just the requirements for a small company of a couple of enthusiastic vets, that they just didn't have the resources to do what was required to meet the standards to get full registration. So unfortunately, we no longer have access to either the stem cell activator or the kits that we use to extract the stem cells from fat, and we can no longer offer that service to our clients, which has been a real shame.
Is anybody else in New Zealand able, are there any other suppliers?
Not that I'm aware of at the moment, but that's something that we need to investigate. I mean, the stem cell activator was fantastic from the point of view that it was non-invasive, and we got some very good results with it, and it was completely without any apparent side effect. It wasn't a miracle cure, but we found that around 85% of the patients that we treated had a positive response, which is incredibly high, and the average improvement in lameness and pain scores was around 75%.
It's a shame that such positive outcomes got thwarted.
Yes, it definitely was. And, you know, for the mainstay of arthritis treatment has been using non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. They are not without their side effects, and some animals just can't tolerate them at all. And so, you know, I had people travelling up from Christchurch for stem cell treatment, and it was something that was exciting. Our staff loved being involved. They were worked in the lab doing so a lot of the processing work, and when you saw the results of the treatment, so it was satisfying to be involved in something that was innovative and groundbreaking, but unfortunately we've had to shelf that in the meantime.
Was it a hard sell to your clients? Because back then it would have been something quite radical and innovative.
It wasn't a hard sell. I think with anything that we're scientists, so that we rely upon factual evidence of things being effective, I think the safety side of it was something that was really important. And I think if you have the trust of your clients and it's something that you truly believe in and make as a recommendation with that trust, and if you can show them results, then yeah, it wasn't difficult, certainly wasn't a hard sell, but it wasn't a cure-all for every patient. And there were, you know, of the 85% that did respond, then there was a correspondingly 15% that didn't. So you had to go into it, or have clients go into it, with that open mind.
What other innovative procedures have you done or are planning?
Well, I think we've always been open to new ideas and always been a clinic that's been an early adopter. I was only the third veterinarian in New Zealand to become certified in the pen hip technique of assessing breeding dogs for hip dysplasia, and that involved doing a special training course that was only available in the States at the time. So when I was in Florida actually doing the practitioner in residence, I flew up to Las Vegas for a weekend to the pen hip training course. That was something that was special to bring back to New Zealand, because it was, you know, at the time, scientifically a much better and more reliable assessment scheme for hip dysplasia. Yeah, I've always had an open mind. We've introduced TPLO surgeries for our patients for cruciate ligament injuries, and that's quite a technical operation that often had only been done by specialist surgeons. And so we're pleased to be able to offer that to our clients. And we've always been receptive to new ideas. In the process at the moment, we've almost got all of the equipment sorted. There's been a little bit of a hold up getting ventilator fitted to our anesthetic machine, but we're going to be launching laparoscopic surgeries for non-invasive bitch spays, which has a tremendous value in terms of recovery of those patients, as if sort of hardly anything's happened. But my real passion for wanting to introduce laparoscopic surgery, and it involved me actually going to Romania to do the training course over 5 days, but it's to introduce, well, it will be laparoscopic assisted gastropexies for working Huntaway dogs and giant breed dogs, because it's always so sad when these cases come in and the mortality rate is about a third in these animals when they get GDV or the twisted, bloated stomach. It is a really serious emergency. So at the moment, to perform the gastropexy, where we're anchoring the stomach to the abdominal wall so it can't rotate, is a full laparotomy surgery. So if we can do it as a laparoscopic assisted procedure, then it's a lot less invasive. I think we'll be much easier to convince people of the value of doing that to help prevent that risk. So that's an exciting, the next sort of chapter, I suppose, of new innovation at Vet Marlborough.
How many clinics would be doing it that way?
Well, in the South Island currently, there's only one other, and I'm not sure about nationally, there's probably less than six, I would say.
So if we have a vet who's interested in expanding their skills there, get in touch. Talk to me, please. I sort of alluded this just now. You live in... Well, actually, you don't. It sounds like you sort of live across the bay, but you work in a small city, New Zealand world standards, population about 29,000. What advantages and disadvantages are there of being a veterinarian in a city of that size?
Well, I guess I don't live directly in Blenheim, I'm still very much a part of the Blenheim community. And I have lived here for a number of years now. I guess in Blenheim, the funny thing to me when I first came here was that the perception was if you had to drive 5 minutes, it was a long way away. And if you couldn't park outside the store that you wanted to shop at, then, you know, that was just terrible. And I have personalised number plates. So my wife gave me the canine vet plates when they first personalized plates first came out. So, you know, everybody knows where you are who's certainly can't be incognito. And, you know, in a smallish city, large town, I mean, you get recognized at the supermarket. If you go out to shows or to a restaurant, you're bound to see clients or people that will recognize who you are. And that has good and bad. It's sort of nice to feel close and part of the community, and we have been actively involved in the community, and as a company we see a responsibility to put things back into the community by way of sponsorship and support as well. But Blenheim has evolved a lot with the development of the wine industry. So when we first came here, that was in its infancy, and Blenheim was more of a service town for the rural community, and quite conservative, but there's certainly a lot more diversity now as people have moved in for the lifestyle and as part of the wine industry. It's a wonderful, supportive community. We've got incredible facilities that have been supported by the business community in terms of, you know, sponsorship and funding. So we've got an amazing theatre that's world class. So, you know, performing arts is something that's a very important part of the community. And the local operatic society have just done the production of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and the performances are amazing. We also have an incredible stadium that has all the facilities from indoor courts, indoor pool, gymnasium, etc. And that's been a wonderful community asset, both for all stages of the community, from the young kids learning to swim to elderly people doing their, you know, exercise in the pool and gymnasium for training, squash courts. But it also attracts a lot of sports tournaments to Marlborough, which is great for the local economy. But for me, I guess, yeah, living in Marlborough, wherever you go, because of the wine industry, people know of Marlborough. And so Marlborough people are proud of being able to say that they come from Marlborough. So there's a lot of pride in the community. And then for me, why I stayed here was largely because of the lifestyle afforded with the Marlborough Sounds and very close to the Nelson Lakes National Park, where I've spent a lot of time growing up as a child. So I'm a fairly active person. I enjoy a lot of outdoor pursuits, including sailing, water skiing, scuba diving, mountain biking, snow skiing, etc. So that's all, you know, on your doorstep here. And yet we can be in Auckland in 75 minutes. So there's, you know, regular flights, partly because of the wine industry. It's very close. 20-minute flight to Wellington, it's an hour and a half drive to Nelson, Christchurch, about 4 hours to drive. So everything is not too far away. Being central is provides a wonderful opportunity, both in terms of lifestyle, but if you need a big city fix, well, it's pretty easy to get it.
I'm married to a mad keen aviator. We were hoping to get to Blenheim this year, just gone, for the air show.
Yeah, and that is, you know, it's an incredible event that every 2 years, and it's world class, and it's a fantastic air show. And associated with that has been Peter Jackson's involvement in developing the Aviation Heritage Museum, which is incredible, with those sort of almost live displays with the various planes. So it's a major tourist attraction. People come from all around the world to see that centre.
I'm not really a museum person, but I've been through that Omaka Museum and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it?
If any of what you heard here today sounds like the type of team you would like to be on, please remember to get in touch with either Isabel or myself at vetstaff.co.nz. I'll put the info in the show notes page where you're listening to this episode for you. Now, changing the subject, have you checked out the Revive Your Drive 2-minute videos designed to help veterinary employees and employers zhuzh up their mental health? These were designed for Mental Health Awareness Month of May, which has just finished. There are now 31 2-minute Revive Your Drive videos with tips on managing conflict in the workplace, prioritizing workloads, and how to achieve work-life balance or blend. To catch them, to listen to them, to watch them, check out vetclinicjobs.com/resources or find the link on the show notes page as well where you're listening to this podcast right now. This is Julie South signing off and inviting you to go out there and be the most fantabulous version of you can be. Kia kaha, ka kite anō. God bless. Paws, Claws and Wet Noses is sponsored by VetStaff. If you've never heard of VetStaff, it's New Zealand's only full-service recruitment agency 100% dedicated to the veterinary sector. VetStaff has been around since 2015 and works nationwide, from Cape Reinga to the Bluff and everywhere in between. As well as helping Kiwis, vet staff also helps overseas qualified veterinarians find work in Aotearoa New Zealand. vetstaff.co.nz.